out of the door, and he put the gun out of the door, and he put the gun in my chest, and he said, "Live or die." That's the first thing he said. And he was just squeezing so tight, I didn't think I was going to live. I didn't think I was going to live through it.
Hello and welcome back to True Crime Las Vegas. This is episode 4. We are back in studio. It's actually a rainy day in Vegas, and we're not doing this late night after work. We're all in a good mood. We're in high spirits. We have energy.
The inauguration feels like I'm doing it in the background.
Yeah, the inauguration chaos in the background. President Donald Trump being sworn in. Kind of strange. But yeah, I mean, like I said, we're in good spirits and ready to do this. I want to give some mentions to some people that hit us up on Instagram and Twitter this week. I want to give another quick shout out to Kimber Gets Healthy. Thank you for putting up a post about our show and sharing it with people. We appreciate that. At True Crime Norge, thank you for the kind words. At Zoobs, Zoobs,
Zoobs
on Instagram said she loves the show. Thank you very much. She subscribed.
Hell yeah.
At Jordan Texas shared a post of ours and told everybody in the True Crime community to check it out. We really appreciate that.
Thanks
thank
very
you.
Much.
Don't mess
thank
with you. Texas. And I want to thank at Thaz Kiz, Thaskizz, who connected with us on Twitter and told us, corrected us basically, not connected,
right.
connected, and told us that we were wrong about the amount of pedestrian deaths in Las Vegas. We're actually 13th in the nation, which is, it's up there. You know, there's a lot of cities in the
better.
Country. We can do better.
2017, we're going to go for number one.
I think we'll at least be top 10.
Yeah. I don't know about you, but I'm going to start seeing humans as bowling pins. It's pretty dark. You can follow us on Twitter. We are at True Crime LV. On Instagram, we are True Crime Las Vegas. And just quickly want to throw it out there. We are on iTunes, Stitcher, all that stuff. So if this is your first time listener, welcome aboard. It's still early. We've only done a few episodes, and we just actually made a new logo for the show.
It's pretty dope.
Yeah. If you like it, let us know. If you don't, let us know why.
And we won't change it.
Also, you can subscribe on iTunes. We'd appreciate that so that whenever the episodes come up, you get them right in your feed. Boom, bada bing. And rate and review on iTunes if you get a second, please. We'd really appreciate that.
And also a quick shout out to Natalie and Michael from Detective Society.
Absolutely.
They said they were going to check us out. They're also a true crime podcast. They're not exclusive to where they are. I think they're out of Indiana. I think. Maybe wrong. Sorry, Natalie, if you're not.
And they happened to do the topic that we're doing today.
Yeah,
they thunder. Yeah. But it was very good. I listened to it.
It was very good.
We'll see if maybe we can have
a pretty much just let Natalie do all our research.
Yeah.
And then we just listened to that on repeat.
I listened to it with a notepad.
Exactly. I was like, okay, well, here we go.
She does her research. Definitely. So I want to cover a couple of notable crimes in Las Vegas this week. The homicide investigation and conviction of some people. So 18-year-old Richard Nelson, a freshman at Missouri State University and former football star at Chaparral High School here in Las Vegas. He was a really well-liked kid. He was a straight-A student, like I said, great athlete, and he's just one of those kids that rises above. Like he was, Chaparral had made videos of what a great athlete and student and role model he was and all this stuff. Anyways, he was actually killed this week trying to break up a fight between his sister and some other girl that they knew. It was just one of those lover's quarrel things, and a car with a group full of people pulled up to Nelson's house, and his sister went out there to try and get them to leave because they weren't welcome, and his sister got jumped. There was a mother involved who drove the car full of kids over there to start problems.
It's ridiculous.
And anyways, Nelson is, his sister's getting jumped, and he tries to pull some people off of his sister to protect his sister, and one of the people of the other group shoots him in the back 5 times, killing him at the scene. He died in his mother's arms. Tragic, terrible thing that didn't need to happen. And this was kind of swarming the local news this week because, you know, just remembering this kid, he seemed to be a really good kid. And already there's been the arrest of 17-year-old Richard Newsom. They're both named Richard. Richard Newsom was the shooter and I believe brother of the girl that Richard Nelson's sister had a beef with. And also brought up on charges is 37-year-old Tiana Thomas, which is the mother of Richard Newsom, the shooter, who drove him over there to get into this confrontation in front of the house of Richard Nelson.
Right.
And so they've been charged, I guess, Richard Newsom has been charged with murder and his mother has been charged with accessory. So wow. This is, you know, it's also kind of a similar case to the Tammy Myers thing. It's like, why are you driving your kid over to, I don't know. The Tammy Myers thing is really complicated and there's more to it than this. This is just, you're going over there, you're starting, I don't know if anyone knew that this kid was going to pull out a gun and blast Richard Nelson over this. Maybe they thought it was just going to be a fight, but these things nowadays,
no
one just ever fights anymore. It's, can we just,
right.
Friday, you know, put up your dukes. You win some, you lose some, but you live to fight another day.
Take your glasses off.
Right? You know? Yeah, you take your whooping or you put one out and then it's
over.
Put
your weapons down, put your keys down.
Right.
Yeah. Do a one-on-one and not
that's
a,
right.
That's the other thing. Yeah, is like
one-on-one.
Yeah,
I bring a car full of people.
Any of us in Richard Nelson's position would have done exactly what he did.
Oh, absolutely.
His sister's being jumped. There's multiple people kicking her. There's a boy kicking her. So like the girls got into it and then on the ground, the I guess like the brother of the girl that was getting beat up starts kicking her in the face and all this stuff. So of course he comes out to defend and I guess either his mother or his sister, Richard Nelson, was trying to hold him back, but he just, you know, he had to protect his sister.
Yeah.
And, you know, unfortunately it went terribly in that. Right. And you had another one of this week, kind of interesting.
Yeah, two brothers got into a little scuffle over the Green Bay and Dallas game.
Great game. Game of the year, in my opinion.
Awesome game. Very close, but...
But if you're a Dallas fan, not so great.
Right. Especially if your brother's a Green Bay fan.
Sorry.
But they got into a scuffle. It escalated.
Sorry, Jordan, Texas.
Yeah, one brother ended up stabbing the other one to death.
Yeah, crazy. This Unreal. Happened not too far from my parents' house, and it was just one of those things. The brother was in town. He wasn't even a local, and he got into it with his brother. I guess a family member broke it up, and then he went back after him again and ended up getting stabbed. And the police are early on in the investigation. Police are right now saying that it's possibly self-defense. And I don't know the details of how brutal it was.
Right.
You know,
it just depends on how far the other guy was taking it.
Yeah, if the brother was really afraid for his life enough to stab his own brother, I don't know. I'm sure alcohol was involved.
Of course.
I've been there when the 49ers lost in the NFC Championship game. I've been hammered on a bunch of IPAs and smashing stuff around the house. But
so many holes in my
mouth. Not enough to smash. I don't have a brother, but I don't think I would have stabbed him.
No,
maybe once.
Yeah, maybe once. If he was a Giants fan when we lost to the team, yeah.
Not an arterial stab, but, you know.
Yeah. And so with these two, that brings up the total in 2017 homicides in Las Vegas to 10. That's quite a few because we're 19 days into the year. So we're averaging one
20th?
Every other, we're averaging more than one every other day. So one every 2 days, even more than that, really. So, I mean, I don't know. We were talking about 2016 and how bad it was for homicide and robbery and all this stuff. And I want to get to an episode about robberies because we definitely have plenty of those here.
Yeah.
And I have a personal story about it. And I think a good episode to be would be robbers that break into houses and end up on the wrong end of it, end up getting shot by the homeowner, which happens a lot in Las Vegas. It seems more often than not when someone breaks into a home here and the person's home, the robber gets shot.
Right.
And so there's some crazy stories that I can recall off the top of my head where this happened. And maybe we could have a whole episode around that and do some of those. But we'll get to the topic at hand.
That's right.
Which is the story of the suspected serial killer, Neil Falls. This was brought to our attention by Heather S. 1983 on Twitter. She's actually a writer and a contributor for Sword and Scale, great podcast, one of my favorite true crime shows.
Yes.
And she had a great article on Sword and Scale's website about Neil Falls that we used as a resource for this, among 50 million other websites.
Right,
so
as well as
too
the
many
Facebook
to list.
Page.
But we do want to give her definitely a shout out for that. Thank you for bringing our attention, because on the surface it seems like way too convoluted, like, well, he was here and here and here, and it's like, but when you start we dug in. I spent hours and hours last night going down the wormhole and trying to track his whereabouts throughout his life and all this. But what we're going to start is we're going to do this kind of like a Quentin Tarantino movie. We're going to start at the end and then start at the beginning after that.
And we're going to play joyful music
over
a death scene. No, I don't know. I might edit that in later.
Right? You're going to be okay.
Tarantino's the best.
Okay, so we're going to start with the day he died. This is Charleston, West Virginia, July 18th, 2015. Neil Falls knocks on the door of Heather Saul. He found her on backpages.com, and he was going there. At least to her knowledge, they were going to have some kind of relations for money.
Right.
And so when she answers the door, he puts a gun to her chest and says, "Live or die." those are your two options. Immediately. That's the first thing he says with the gun to her chest.
It's a solid introduction.
Yeah.
First impressions.
Yeah, so Neil told her he was going to prison for a long time, and it was her choice whether it was going to be for rape or murder. He then grabbed her throat and, through her own words, because she's done a lot of media afterwards, she says she could barely breathe. Mm-hmm. In her mind, he was going to kill her.
Right.
Regardless.
At that moment.
What?
Yeah. No matter what the outcome, how he killed her, she was going to die if he had anything to do with it.
Right.
So he's choking her, and at some point they make their way towards her kitchen. They're in the entryway to her kitchen, and thinking she's going to die, she needs to do anything. She starts reaching around, grabbing for anything near her. There happens to be just
a rake in the kitchen.
Like a long tooth comb,
it's like
basically.
Fate. You know, yeah. She wasn't supposed to die that day. Neil was because she happens to have this garden rake leaning against the wall on the entry to her kitchen.
No. It's not a garden rake.
Well, it's a small rake. Whatever it is,
it's
gardening or something.
No, it's for your hair.
For your hair?
Yeah.
No.
Yes, it is.
No, she definitely had a rake. I saw a video of her holding up the rake, and then it showed two teeth on the rake.
You'd have to have one hell of a head of hair, Michael.
And she.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hey guys, write in on Twitter about this.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it wasn't your full size like raking leaves, but it was like, I want to say it's some kind of a garden rake or something like that.
All right, we'll go with that.
Anyway,
that's more interesting.
Why would he be afraid of a comb, dude?
Like you guys comb. Don't know like what kind of.
My mom did hit me in the head when I would like bitch about her combing my hair. Sometimes it stung a little bit, but I'm not so afraid. I'm gonna put my gun down over it. Which leads us to what happened.
Well, some of them have metal spikes, though. And if she was going for the eyes, which I'm sure she was, he was like, what the hell?
Well, either way, whatever it was, he was threatened enough that he sets his gun on her kitchen table to try and get to pry the rake slash comb out of her hands.
Yeah.
And that was the biggest mistake he'd ever made in his life, because she's able to then grab the gun, reach behind her, shooting him in, some say the neck, some say the face. But either way, it killed him immediately.
Yeah.
And there he lay dead on her floor. And so we have even some quotes from her. Before that, he said, I'm going to call the orders and you're going to be quiet. So that's before the struggle made its way into the kitchen where it ended. There's interviews she's done since, and there's even the interrogation and all this stuff. And she's clearly, she rightfully killed him, because it's clear he was going to kill her.
Right.
And when the police arrived, they found in his Subaru Forester what they called a kill kit. You want to give us the breakdown of what was in it, Michael? Do you have that in front of you?
Yeah, I do. He had knives, axes, plastic wrap, four sets of handcuffs, which the police later said that was a common thing for murderers who disassemble their victims, because you got one for each limb. See what I mean? So you would almost spread them out into like a star pattern.
See, I saw two sets, but that would do the same thing, right? No.
You'd
want one for each.
Yeah, one for each
arm, one for each leg.
Yeah, two ankles, two wrists.
Oh, that's creepy.
Yeah, a Rubbermaid container that was large enough for a woman to fit in easy.
Yeah, and that was in his back seat. And then the hatch of the Forester was where all the axes and all that stuff
was. And he had bleach.
He had a shovel. Sludge hammer, two axes, a throwing axe.
He pretty much had the serial killer starter kit.
Yeah, a bottle of bleach.
Or finisher kit.
start and finisher kit. Yeah, I guess he wouldn't call it a starter kit.
He had the collector's edition, actually, I think.
Yeah, no, the starter kit would be a little simpler, I think. He had the deluxe version, for sure. Yeah. The deluxe kill
kit. Starting kit would just be like a sniper rifle.
Yeah. sniper rifle and a shovel. Basic.
With the serial number filed off.
Was there a shovel? I didn't see.
He did
have
a shovel.
There was a shovel. Okay. There was a machete. There was...
Machete.
The weirdest one, I thought, was there was 100 bags of sub sandwiches.
There was Subway bags. Just the
sandwiches.
The
sandwiches weren't in there. Right?
Yeah, the sandwiches weren't in there. There was just
they found the rotting corpses of 500 Subway sandwiches.
Want them to starve back there,
right? Decaying in the back of his Subaru Forester were 500 sandwiches from Subway.
Like old tomatoes and lettuce.
The stench reeked for miles. Yeah, he had, I don't know why, but he did have an abnormal amount of Subway sandwich bags, just the clear Subway. And we were speculating before the show what this could have been for. He was saying maybe it was Michael said something silly. He's like, what if it was to put it over their heads? And I was like, what are they, Marge Simpson heads? What are you talking about? They don't have heads shaped like a hot dog, bro. Maybe to put limbs
I
in.
I told him
limbs,
Subway or... has bigger bags.
The footlong, bro.
Listen, dude, I got a family of five. When I go to Subway, they don't give me that little skinny bag.
No, that's not what he had, though. He had the sandwich
right,
bag.
Yeah.
The little slipped-in bag right. that you put your sandwich in.
Absolutely. But yeah, that could be for hands.
But we speculated, the more you get to learn about Neil, he's a very strange guy. He's mysterious. And a lot of these weird guys, they're very systematic. I have a feeling he was the kind of guy that went to Subway three times a day. That's all he ate. Probably went to the same one. You know what I mean?
Isn't it weird those Subway addicts turn out to be creepy?
And he
Jared.
He traveled the country nonstop, which is something we learned. We're going to get through that. But Subways are everywhere. They're in every city. So he just wanted something consistent to eat that every city has.
Possibly.
Or maybe he had intentions for these bags. I don't know. They're definitely a...
I would still go with
a strange thing.
The limbs in the bag.
We're yet to get a statement from Subway.
Yeah. We need to. Jared?
Definitely.
Crickets.
Crickets.
In Neil's pocket, the police also found a yellow Post-it note with the names and numbers of at least six other women that he had intended to meet with. Five of them
and
were
ages,
in...
too. That was kind of weird.
Ages, numbers, locations, addresses. Yep. Five of them were in West Virginia where he was killed, and one of them was as far away as San Diego. So, I mean, as we'll get to, there's a lot of speculation. Maybe he was involved in a lot of cases across the country. He would meet girls on back pages, and he would just drive to them.
Well, they had multiple things in common, but the back pages thing is the common denominator.
Yeah. And so shortly after his death, police and media began to investigate and wonder whether Neil had been the answer to several missing persons cases across the country. You know, you start to connect dots. And did you want to break down all the different stops that he had been involved in throughout the country?
Yes.
So police in so many different states had stopped him, and he got away with no charges.
Right. This was for the past 15 years. He was stopped by police in Arizona, California, Colorado, Georgia, Iowa, Kansas, Kentucky, Missouri, Montana, New Mexico, Nevada, Oregon, Texas, Virginia, and West Virginia.
Yeah, and so
over the course of the last 15 years.
And so what people started to do is look, okay, when was he stopped there? Were there women that went missing in that time frame? Were there women that had been dismembered and found elsewhere that were missing from that location in that time frame? Some things that people have connected him to was six women that were missing found dead in Chillicothe, Ohio, so southern Ohio, not too far from West Virginia. I guess it's less than a two-hour drive from Charleston where he was killed. And that was between 2014 and 2015 that those six women were either missing or found dead. They've potentially leaked him to those, but, you know, there's no...
Right. The timelines match up.
There's nothing definitive, but they seem to match up. They seem to match his MO, fit the part. Some people have even said he could have been involved in the Long Island killings. You know, Lisk, the Long Island serial killer, 10 to 16
Jesus.
Bodies were discovered in 2010. And it was there was a big gap that these women were missing. I find that one improbable. We're not going to try and cover that one.
Stretch.
Yeah. I mean, they even think that the Long Island serial killer might've been multiple people that were dumping bodies at the same location. That's a whole other rabbit hole I didn't really want to go down.
Right.
We're going to dismiss the Long Island thing, and not to say that he couldn't have done it, but he most likely didn't do it just because it would have taken too much time, and he was all over the place elsewhere. So,
and he would have started at, what, 25?
Yeah. I think
not that it's not possible, but...
Yeah, because he was 45. You do.
Might as well be Long Island.
Right? Yeah. That was his starter kit days. his kill kit wasn't as elaborate back then.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it's just kind of, that one's a little bit of a stretch. And what people are doing is just any missing person case across the country, any time that he was around, it just seems like they're just throwing those on him. Texas, he was pulled over in July of 2015, also sent a package including weapons, money, and documents to a woman he'd been staying with, and also left his dog with her, potentially. There's a lot of information about his dog hair in his car that they're trying now to maybe hopefully link dog hair to the
They're victims. Just scratching for anything right now.
Yeah.
Like, you know, souvenirs that he took from victims, trying to match this dog hair. You know, they're really reaching. He covered his tracks well, apparently.
He did. We'll go into his history in a minute, but the reason we're doing Neil Falls is because of the four women that were missing or found murdered prostitutes in Las Vegas from 2003 to 2006, that there is a link and people really feel he may be responsible for. Mm-hmm. So those are the three, those are the four women in the story, the murder cases that we are going to focus on the most. We've got profiles on the girls missing, and we're going to try and by the end of the episode to determine whether he is guilty of these or potentially guilty, or maybe we find it to also be a stretch.
Right.
But we'll go back, way back to Neil, the very beginning of Neil Falls, and kind of get into who he is. He was born September 24th, 1969 in Eugene, Oregon. He had nine siblings. Apparently he had an abusive father, mm-hmm. which checking boxes there. A lot of it seems like
neglected.
There are some serial killers that abused. Had a great childhood, but it's rare. Usually it was fucked up, you know. He reportedly lived around Oregon until 1992 and relocated to Greensburg, Kansas with his father. Mm-hmm. Lived there until 1996. His father died in 95, and he shortly left afterwards. He then moved back to Oregon and ended up taking courses, obtained certifications, and had his fingerprints documented by the FBI, all for security purposes. He was going to go into the security field. Mm-hmm. He always had a fascination with guns, with security, with the military, police, all that kind of stuff. So he started taking courses and all that. And in 2000, he moved to Henderson, Nevada, just outside of Las Vegas. It's basically Las Vegas. It's the southeast part of
southeast.
Town. It's one of those things, like, you would, if you're in Vegas,
you don't realize you crossed the line.
You start driving south, you're in Henderson.
Yeah.
There's like, there's no clear line. It's just, it's basically Las Vegas.
Yeah.
Same thing as North Las Vegas. Technically, North Las Vegas is a different city, but it's Las Vegas. It's, it's all lumped together. It's all one big metropolitan area. And so he was living in Henderson from 2000 to 2008. And he was living with a woman. He was actually sharing or renting a room from a woman that lived in Henderson, and he lived there for eight years with her. And she's actually come out and done interviews, said that he was a quiet guy, kept to himself. He would go to work, come home. He did try to show her his gun collection. That was kind of that's the common theme you see through this whole thing.
He shared the gun collection with everybody.
He's an annoying guy. Like, you know, like we all know that person. Like, look at my guns.
Look at my guns, man.
Look at my guns, man.
He probably did talk like that because remember he didn't have teeth.
I heard he had a lisp. That was the guy. There was a guy. Okay, so this is another thing we can bring up real quick. In Charleston, the day he was killed, on the way to Heather's house, he stopped at a convenience store. And inside, he talked to a local person, not the person that works there, but he talked to like a person in line or something. Mm-hmm. And he was asking if there was a gun range around there because he wasn't really familiar with the area. And the guy that was in there said, he told him where there was a gun range. And he said, you can shoot like 300 yards there. It's cool. He's like, I don't need to shoot that far. But one of the things the guy said was that he had a very strange, like, feminine voice with a lisp. And he also said that when he watched him drive away because he thought the whole conversation was just strange.
Right.
And he's, you know, later on he ended up calling the cops after he saw the whole news story break of Heather and him dying and everything. And he told the cops that he didn't see a dog in the car because there was a lot of links to dogs and dog hair and all this stuff. Anyways, he did have a weird voice apparently.
Yeah. A lot of his coworkers said that they contributed a lot of that though because he didn't have any teeth. He had all his teeth pulled.
That's right.
And he just...
Terrible hygiene, apparently.
Yeah, and he just wore his top ones. He didn't wear the bottom denture.
Yeah.
He just wore the top ones.
That was...
Oh, boy. So, I mean, how would you talk if you just had
How
your
could
top
a guy
teeth?
Like this have to pay for sex? I don't understand.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd think the ladies would just be flocking to him.
Right?
Talking about his guns with his top teeth.
Hey, ladies. Let me show me my guns. You see my guns?
You see my guns?
I love making fun of creeps.
Right.
It's a good time. Okay, so where were we? He moved to Henderson. The woman that he lived with, she didn't want to give her name. She just called herself Jane in the interview. Yeah. She said that he would have, like, he would eat Thanksgiving dinner with them. He
Part
watched,
of the family.
This is kind of creepy. He watched her daughter go through high school.
Literally.
Yeah.
With
watched her through the window every night.
Yeah.
Standing outside her classroom.
Yeah. So,
staring at her.
And I thought about it. I was like, damn, that's got to be strange for Jane. Quote unquote, Jane, to realize this guy was a potential serial killer.
Exactly.
And he was living with my daughter under the same roof for many years, for 8 years. You know, he watched her grow up. I don't know if he wasn't her cup of tea or she wasn't his cup of tea.
Well, she probably wasn't a strawberry blonde.
And I think we decided that the guy was strawberry, strawberry curly blonde hair girl. Yeah. Maybe she wasn't, but also I think he's maybe not a smart guy, but he's at least savvy enough to not shit where he eats. He's not going
to
give the police a direct link.
Obviously,
between.
If he's scattering bodies across the U.S.
Yes.
He's.
Yeah.
Supposedly.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll get there.
Yeah.
So Yeah, he's living in Henderson, and he was working at the Hoover Dam on the Arizona side. They put him kind of out of the public's way, mainly. He was just working a checkpoint, and nobody there trusted him. Nobody there liked him. He had terrible hygiene. He just didn't have a good posture, demeanor, anything about him, so they kind of just threw him to the side, and he consistently creeped out his coworkers.
Yeah.
Many of them have come out afterwards and talked about all these different stories. There's Facebook screen caps you can look up.
Oh, my gosh.
Did you want to get into any of those?
You can get lost.
Go ahead and break
days.
Down what his coworkers thought of him. And what
I'll give you a little
about.
Bit of conversation from this guy. His name is Daryl Kelly. It was one of his coworkers.
He came out and did an interview since.
Yeah, he came out and did an interview. So I thought it was pretty interesting. Here's one of his conversations with him. This is from Kelly's point of view. He said, "You'd be like, Neil, what'd you do this weekend?" And he'd go, "Picked up a hooker and drove up.
Picked up a hooker and
drove up and down the highway."
And then
Kelly
said,
"And the weird thing is, he's like, he'd always have 10 grand in cash in his car in a paper sack. And you'd ask him, what's that for? And he'd say, it's in case I got to go somewhere.
In case I got to bolt.
Yeah. In case I got
to
bolt.
Or pay for a Philippine hooker. Apparently, he would brag about going to the Philippines and getting call girls there or hookers.
Mike. Quite possibly be an international murder.
Yeah, he did admit to going down to the Philippines for sex workers, and so I mean that's something that the police I'm sure have looked into.
Right.
I don't know if they can find a link there or not. Also, Brandon, we were talking about how his coworkers would ask him because he would come into work hours early
yeah,
in the morning.
Yeah.
Yes.
And they would ask him what are you doing here so early? What were you out there doing? And he would say he was doing night ops.
Night ops.
Yeah. So he'd say it's an open area. He said you could park here and do a lot of things.
Yeah.
It was one of the things he was quoted to say as well. And it was weird. He said he was routinely got in trouble for lighting animals on fire.
Throwing rocks
at
mice and rats and
killing small animals
while on the job.
What was the Brandon, you want to tell the story about the deer?
Oh, okay. He had a deer near where he was staying.
I'm guessing in Oregon. There's lots.
And he was proud of this. Let's put that out there.
So he was proudly telling
this story a lot.
Yeah.
He befriended a deer, feeding it, and got it to the point where it was actually eating out of his hand.
Trusting him completely.
Yeah. And
that takes a while. Deer are very...
Oh, yeah.
They're prey animals, so they're...
Lauren's dog won't even let me pet it.
Yeah.
Right? She looks like a deer. Well, probably because you're going to do what he did.
Well, yeah. And then took a knife and just started stabbing the shit out of it and ended up killing a deer.
It's called hunting, bro.
I don't think he ate this deer.
It's called hunting.
That's an impressive kill.
I don't think he's got it on his mantle. Maybe a dead hooker, but...
It's dismembered across the country.
Yeah.
He put it in Subway sandwich bags.
Oh.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, these are the kind of things that would consistently creep out his coworkers.
Yeah. This is Neil Falls in a nutshell.
Yeah, and you can look up. I mean, if you dig, you can look for the screen captures because his coworkers, after they found out what happened to him, someone looked up his old coworkers' conversations on Facebook and screen capped it all. They took the names out and everything, so you don't know who's having the conversations. But basically, they're going back and forth like, "I knew it. He was such a creep." They used to consistently joke about whenever he would get off work that he was going to go kill hookers that night.
Kill hookers. Little did they know.
Yeah, he was killing. Well. We can't. That's the thing about Neil is like he's so mysterious. Two photos of him, and we can't definitively say as of right now that he killed anyone. We're talking about him like he tried to kill Heather. She killed him. That's the only. He's never been convicted.
But there were a lot of signs, man.
That's what this is about. There's a lot of signs.
Yeah, and we don't
just
even
ignored.
We don't even know that he was going to kill her because he could have. Wanted to knock her out and then have sex with her and then leave her alone because being a prostitute,
he did say it's your decision whether it's going to be rape or murder that he's going away for.
Who's she going to complain to that she had a strange man over from off a back page to do what?
One more quick note on his coworkers and their experiences with him there. One thing that he would consistently do is when someone would slight him or piss him off or say something, because one of his coworkers got tired of him torturing little mice and animals and actually reported him. And one thing he would do is he would take out this little black book and he would write your name down right in front of you and just give you an evil glare and then close the book and put it in his pocket. He had like a list of guys, people,
girls. Need?
Right.
Yeah. And he was constantly getting in trouble and freaking out. Yep. There was like one of the posts on the Facebook page. was they were asking another employee, they said, weren't you working that day? He got in some trouble and we thought he was going to shoot up the Arizona checkpoint, and Sergeant so-and-so unsnapped his holster. He was legit scared.
Yeah.
Like he literally had his hand on his pistol getting ready to take this dude out.
Yeah.
Like, and this was like a weekly thing. This happened all the time.
Yeah. The thing is, like, I know some weird people. Like, one of my best friends is one of the strangest people you'll ever meet. His name's Dustin. Great guy. Was my best man at my wedding. But if he turned out to be a serial killer, I can't say that I would be like, oh my God. I'd be like, oh my God. Okay, so the signs
you'd be
were,
like, well, that's just Dustin.
Yeah, pretty much, man. Like, I don't know what the hell he does. Like, he doesn't work. And he's even told stories to me where he was like, dating girls on Tinder and like taking them back to his place. And like, God, this girl's stupid. Like,
yeah.
the thing is, like, you never know. This Neil thing is like, there's so many signs, but sometimes those all they are signs and they're not anything more. I think that is more with him. But my point is, we all meet people that they wouldn't surprise us that much, but most of them don't ever kill anybody. You know, we've all met people where we're like, dude, if that guy was a serial killer, I'd be like, that makes kind of sense. But usually they're not.
And plus, in your own little world, in your day-to-day life, you like to think that that kind of stuff's not going to enter into your world.
And
it's not going to cross over into where I actually live.
I think a lot of stuff clicks in people's heads after it happens, too. They start things that you don't think twice about, typically. Like, if I were to kill someone, and you as much as you've known me, you guys would start going, oh, yeah, remember that time he said that? And that would all of a sudden seem so much more meaningful.
That's true.
You know, maybe
hindsight's 20/20.
Yeah, I'm joking at the time. Maybe, or maybe I'm not. Uh-huh. You know, maybe I'm not.
You know what?
This may be our last episode.
You've got a whole podcast that would, if you went back and listened, and you're like, oh, that's what he said.
Exactly. So, anyway, so yeah, he lived. He ends up okay. So he's working. He's working Hoover Dam, and he ends up actually getting fired for sexual harassment. Believe it or not.
What?
I know his
that
work
doesn't sound like him at all.
I know everyone at work loved him, and it came to a surprise to everyone. Yeah. But he ended up being too creepy with women. That was another thing that he was just very. All the women that he worked with said the same thing that he just creeped them out. Another big glaring sign right in your face.
Yeah.
And so this leads us, we're not going to go too far beyond. We've covered where he died, how he died. We've covered his upbringing, how he made it to Las Vegas. And now why we're here is to cover the deaths of the women that either died or came up missing while the time that he was in Henderson, which was 2000 to 2008. During that time, there was three murdered prostitutes and one found missing. Or not found missing. You can't be found missing.
Found missing.
One found to be missing. There you go.
There we go.
From 2003 to 2006. They fall right in that time frame. They seem to have a trend to them. The police started picking up on the fact that these prostitutes were found dismembered. They were found, some of them, in different states. There was similarities to the way they looked, to their ages, their lifestyles. And so the names of the four girls from 2003 to 2006 in Las Vegas, Jody Brewer, Lindsay Harris, Misty Sains, and Jessica Foster was the one that was never found. And so we'll just start with the earliest one that came up missing, which was Jody Brewer. Jody Brewer was born November 26, 1983 in Seattle, Washington. She moved to Las Vegas with her parents when she was two. Her parents worked in the casino industry, and at 18 years old, after one semester in beauty college, she always was into beauty shows and all that stuff, and she wanted to go to college for that. She ended up dropping out, lost her grant, fell into prostitution at 18. Her mother didn't want Jody on the streets, so she actually got an apartment with her. And literally, like a week after they got the apartment together, she got dropped off at the Harbor Island Club Apartments, and that was the last time anyone had seen her alive.
Yeah.
One witness claimed that she had gotten into a white car with California plates. And 15 days later, on August 29th, a torso determined to be Jody's, basically because of tattoos. She had a hummingbird under her left breast.
And
she
also had a lower back tattoo.
Was it like a name or a number or something?
I think it was an M.
Okay. So she had distinctive tattoos that they were able to, and they confirmed, I believe they confirmed it with DNA too as well.
Yeah. And that was off a California highway, like 25 miles from the border.
It was the I-15. Between Las Vegas and it was in San Bernardino Valley in California, just off the I-15, which if in Vegas, you're heading to California, you take the I-15 south.
Yeah.
The, it, The thing that throws me off is the whole witness seeing her get into a California car, a car with California plates, and then it turns out that she was just part of her body was discovered in California. That kind of points me away from Neil a little bit, but we were talking about it before the show, and it's like she's a working girl. They're getting into all kinds of different cars at different times. She could have easily gotten in the car with the California plates, went and did their business, gotten dropped back off, and the person that witnessed it didn't see her get dropped back off, and then she got with someone else, or maybe she went in the car to meet someone else. We don't know.
Neil
she definitely
met, perhaps.
Yeah.
In Vegas, you can't go anywhere without seeing California plates.
Oh, they're everywhere.
So
it's
we got lots of Californian too.
Especially the area, we know a few areas in Vegas where prostitutes tend to work. Mm-hmm. One of them being I-15 in Tropicana. Right across the street is a truck stop for big rig truckers, long haul truckers, where they eat and they park there. They weigh their trucks and park and everything like that, which is a big reason why hookers hang out there, because you got the I-15, which connects you to California. So people come into town. It's right off the strip. And then you got a truck yard right there, which we all know the whole lot lizard thing. It's an easy way for girls to work because these truckers come in, been on the road all, they're away from their families and they just want a quick something. And so a lot of speculation with these Vegas girls was that it was a serial killer that was a long-haul trucker, because as you'll start to see with these girls, some of them are found, one's found in California, one is found up in Illinois. And so it makes sense,
Yep, it does, but I don't think a trucker would be taking them with them.
Yeah.
I mean, through all the stops, the way stations.
It seems too convenient, right? It seems too on the nose.
He wouldn't have taken, no.
Right. So Jody, after the news of Neil Fall's death in 2015, Pamela Brewer, Jody's mom, actually proclaimed that her case had been solved. She was very happy that her daughter's killer had been found, and she was convinced that Neil Fall's was the killer of her daughter. So she kind of had some closure with that, even though there was no bulletproof evidence linking the two of them, other than the fact that it seemed to fit his M.O., dismembered, well, not even his MO, but whoever was killing them's MO, and the fact that he was living in the area and he had this Supreme kill kit. I think everyone makes.
And do you know if the timeline matched up from his police stop in California? Did it?
When did he get stopped in California?
I'm not sure. We'll have to check on that. But anyways, go ahead.
Yeah, but I mean,
I'll see what I can find.
It's not that far, so it's
right
for you to drive to San Bernardino. It's a couple hours, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you jump on I-15 south. He already lived in Henderson. That's the far south part of town. So it's you just jump on I-15, and you could be out there in a few hours and back to town. You went on one of your night ops. You're telling the people at the Hoover Dam, I just went on a night op.
Yeah.
Only the torso was ever found, I believe, of Jody Brewer. They don't know where the rest of the body was.
And the fact is he kept a sleeping bag and,
He slept in his car a lot.
Everything he needed just to, if he wanted to stay the night somewhere, he'd pull over in a desert and take a nap,
Yep. Yeah, if you're going to be a serial killer, he definitely did it in a way that makes it hard to get caught, because he's killing women that part of our discussion today was going to be about prostitution, call girls. Those detectives don't typically do the same due diligence, because the way they're taught to work is from the inside out. They work with the people that the victim knows. The family, the friends, the boyfriend, these type of things, and they work their way out. You're hoping that this person just didn't come into town from another state, kill the person, and then take off and leave body parts scattered across the country. That makes the investigation a freaking nightmare. So it's definitely the way he was doing it was smart. If he was a serial killer that was killing people across the country, it makes it very difficult, because then you're also crossing state lines. So investigators are trying to determine whose jurisdiction it is. Oh, she was a resident here, but she was killed here. Maybe her body parts were here. Law enforcement has to work together. It makes everything tougher, I'm assuming. I'm not obviously not in law enforcement, but so that takes us to Lindsay Harris. She was 21 years old when she was discovered her body. She was born September 3rd, 1983, in Scandalous, New York. I believe that's how you say it. I could be wrong. At 19, she moved to Las Vegas with her boyfriend, Solomon. Lindsay told her family back in New York that she found work dancing at a club, but she actually really had been making her way up as an escort in Las Vegas. On May 4th, 2005, Lindsay called her twin brother to wish him luck on upcoming exams. She was seen on a surveillance at a Henderson Bank of America making a deposit. Two days later, she left her boyfriend Solomon a voicemail saying she was at the Monte Carlo and heading over to the Luxor. So her boyfriend is in California at the time. Or no, actually, my bad, in Syracuse. He's in
Syracuse, New York.
He was in New York.
Yes.
He was out of town. She was working, doing her thing, meeting clients. But she always, one thing about Lindsay is just she always kept up with her boyfriend. The police suspected him initially when her body was found, that her boyfriend, but when they looked into it, the fact that he was in Syracuse, the fact that she constantly checked up with him to the point where sometimes it was every 4 minutes she was texting him, letting him, every time she went somewhere, she met with someone, she would let him know the details, where she was going. And so she tells him she's going to the Monte Carlo, or she's at the Monte Carlo and she's heading to Luxor. The next day, Solomon hadn't heard from her.
May 6th.
So
when the messages stopped. Yeah.
So he reports to Lindsay's family that, you know, he can't get a hold of her, and she always checked with him. So that's when red flags went up and something's not right here. And 19 days later, on May 21st, three boys riding ATVs in DeVernon, Illinois, discover a human leg. They thought it was a prop initially, apparently. Mm-hmm. It looked fake. And when they got over there, they discovered it actually was a real human leg. And they're three brothers, and apparently their father works for the Illinois State Police.
Yeah. Apparently they're little troublemakers.
Yeah. So when they told their dad, oh, we found a leg.
They're little boys that cried wolf. Apparently.
Yeah. Yeah. When they told their dad they found a leg, their dad's gone, whatever, shut up, whatever, come home. And so they're like, seriously, to the point where he's like, all right, I'm going to go out here and
check
this out.
Now, they also believed that they may have scared someone off.
Yeah. The boys were saying that they saw, would they see movement or something when they were coming up?
They say they may have scared someone off as they were pulling up. They thought they seen somebody run from the
so their
area
dad
where the legs were.
Their dad, the Illinois State Police officer, goes out to check it out. He finds a leg. He finds a human leg. It's fresh. It still has the tattoos on it. It still has nail polish on it. It doesn't have much decay to it. And along with the first leg, buried about a foot and a half deep near the first leg, was another leg. And a tarp was found about 20 feet away from that. And what the police then believed was that what the boys saw trying to make its way away from the legs when they pulled up was actually a coyote it was a coyote that they believed was trying to pull the parts of the legs out for a nice treat, I guess.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they lucked out in finding that before the coyote was able to pick it apart, because they were then able to link with the tattoos to Lindsay, which, good luck. If they hadn't have gotten those legs at that moment, if those boys didn't come across that leg at that moment and those coyotes picked it apart,
that'd have been it.
They would have never known those were Lindsay's legs. They would have no reason to believe it was Lindsay's legs, because this was 3,000 miles away from Las Vegas.
Right.
3,000 miles. So it was definitely a stroke of good luck for her family that they then were able to get that closure that you're not going to find her. She's
right.
Her legs were found 3,000 miles away.
You know, it's funny though that these body parts were left just open. You know, none of them were buried or hidden.
Right.
I mean, they were kind of in remote places, but why not take a few extra minutes to bury it?
Right.
You know, but is this
a foot and a half? The old additive, you know, bury shit deeper than that.
Most serial killers want to be caught.
Mm-hmm.
They want their works to be out there for display. You know, it's part of the rush.
So they can have podcasts talk about them and
yeah.
That and maybe
damn it, we're feeding the monster. This is over.
Maybe the fact that he just didn't want to get caught. He wanted to just dump it and go.
But he did take the time to bury it a foot and a half.
Yeah.
Which is weak, you know.
Yeah.
And he has this prolific killer kit. He needs to add a backhoe to it.
A backhoe. Just carry it around. Just pull the backhoe trailer or the Subaru.
Yeah. Guy always pulled a backhoe around with him. I don't know. It's kind of strange.
I thought it was weird. It had blood on the shovel.
Had to get terrible gas mileage in that Forester pulling that thing. Did you have a timeline on when he was in Illinois stopped by the police, if it matched up at all with the timeline of Lindsay Harris's
I did not.
Discovery?
It says all the states match up where the things happen, but there's no real timeline of the police reports that I can find.
Okay. Well, he had been stopped in Illinois, correct? So he at least somewhat knew the area. He'd been up there. He'd been stopped by the police. And so it is totally reasonable to think that other women around Illinois potentially could be victims. But we're here to talk about the girls that were murdered or missing in Las Vegas.
My thought was kind of odd, but you know, it's possibly he had a dead body on him when he got stopped over. You know, you know what I'm saying? It would be.
Oh yeah, who was it? Was it Dahmer that got stopped?
Oh yeah, Dahmer got stopped with the kid that he was killing or in the process of torturing.
Exactly.
And the police, because they were so uncomfortable with the homosexuality of it, they ended up bringing him back to the apartment, and he invited him in to look around, which he had bodies all over the apartment, and they decided not to go in because they were so uncomfortable with the whole thing, and he ended up killing the kid. Yeah, it was sometimes you the more you listen to these true crime shows, you hear a lot of police not doing their due diligence, and it ends up costing lives, and it's unfortunate. You know, we'd all like to say we would do the right thing, but you know, police, they've got to make judgment calls in a second.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure they've done the same thing before and it's worked out fine, but sometimes you have to go a little bit beyond.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can take that to your own job, regardless of what your job is. Yeah. I mean, at some point in time in your job, you have to make
a judgment call. You could have done a little bit more than you did sometimes. Well,
yeah, and you have to make a judgment call. You're like, yeah, sometimes it turns out no one knows about it, and sometimes it blows up in your face.
Absolutely.
Just when you're a police officer, it's a little more detrimental.
It is, because it's not just, oh, well, that didn't work out for the company. It's, oh, lives were lost here.
Exactly.
And as far as Lindsay Harris, just closing that one out, her family is not fully convinced that Neil did it. They have come to terms with the fact that they may never know what happened to her. So it's kind of interesting to hear. I made a point to look into what the families thought about it. You know, obviously with the first girl, with Jody Brewer, her parents, her mom is convinced that the killer was Neil, and she's going to go out with that. She's now has full closure in her mind. That's great. You know, I guess it's good for you, but at the same time, Lindsay's parents aren't completely, I think that's the right way to go. You can't be completely convinced until you have.
That's what's so aggravating about this story.
It is, because now, I mean, the dude's dead. Good. Right. I'm glad he's dead, but at the same time,
now we're working backwards trying to find his victims. And it's just,
at the same time, you don't have any answers to a lot of this stuff. And the investigation for all this, to make it clear, is still ongoing. You know, this is not a closed case. I'm sure the police are still looking into everything. And the whole true crime community has started discussion boards, and they're trying to piece this together to help the police as well. You know, that's what this is about a lot of times. So Misty Sains, another victim around the 2003 to 2006. She was, her partial remains were found wrapped in a plastic and cloth off the road near Red Rock. So I heard Red Rock Canyon. I heard Blue Diamond.
Blue Diamond, yeah.
Blue Diamond back in 03. This was in 2003, March of 2003. In 03, Blue Diamond, it wasn't like it is now, 14 years later, where it's all built up. It's now Mountain's Edge out there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a whole community out there now. It was a lot more desolate back then. I remember I used to go out there and ride ATVs and stuff, and it was just a highway that would take you to Pahrump.
There's still a lot of space out there, though.
There is still, but then back then there was a lot more.
Man.
And so you can see that somebody could dump a body, and it would take somebody a little bit of time. Then now it would get discovered right away, because there's so much traffic, there's so much growth that's happened off of Blue Diamond.
A lot of people out there hiking, exploring.
I think you live not too far from that area out there.
Yeah, we go out there. We actually went out there last weekend.
Yeah.
Just
find any bodies? Hiking.
No, unfortunately not.
Unfortunately. She was 26 years old, and she was a known prostitute in Las Vegas. I couldn't find a whole lot of information, unfortunately. Well,
obviously not that known.
Right. No, I'm just kidding. I couldn't find a lot of information. A lot of times,
up and coming.
You have to have a diligent family that isn't given. I don't know. I'm not pointing any fingers at Misty's family, but a lot of the information we get about the women seems to be from their families afterwards, and it's just you haven't heard. I looked and I couldn't find much on Misty. I don't know if you understand.
A lot of these women probably separate themselves from their family when they choose this profession. I mean, it's not something they're going to brag about. It's not something they're going to write on the Christmas card. You know what I mean?
Right. So, the first three. That we looked at, they have some definite things in common. They're all blonde prostitutes living in the Las Vegas area. They're all in their 20s.
Yep.
You said strawberry blonde.
Yeah.
Something that's very creepy. All three of the first girls that we mentioned, their middle name is Marie.
Yeah.
Is that not?
It's a super popular middle name, though.
It is. My cousin, her middle name is Marie. But it's
my younger sister's middle name is Marie.
It is just strange.
Yeah.
Quit using that name, people.
Yeah, stop it.
And so now we move to the fourth, Jessica Foster was the one that was never found. She's a missing person still to this day. She was born May 27th, 1984 in Calgary, Canada. She grew up in Kamloops, British Columbia, where she was an honor roll student, attended Bible school or a Bible camp in the summer. And at 20 years old, she began traveling with a friend. She visited New Jersey, New York, and headed to Las Vegas, And in May 2005, she decided to stay there in Las Vegas. And this was around her 21st birthday, like 2 weeks before her 21st birthday, she officially decided to start living here. She became involved in prostitution and was arrested for solicitation and was the victim of battery on several occasions. And so her family is almost what I was talking about, where they're still very diligent. I was reading a lot of stuff.
They're still hoping she's alive.
Yeah, it seems as though Jessica's family didn't want to believe that she was in prostitution. They tend to believe that she was either forced into it.
Right.
There's a lot of human trafficking discussions involved with her. But she disappears in 2006 and has not been seen or heard from since. An interesting thing is her grandmother says that around the time she came up missing, she got a call one night and heard muffled screams.
Oh, yeah. This is creepy.
Yeah, her grandmother gets a call and hears muffled screams like someone was covering a mouth, and she was on the phone. It sounded like her granddaughter, and she sounded panicked. And so it's one of those things. That one's still open, missing persons case.
Yeah.
It's around the time of Neil Falls's residency in here, right smack dab in the middle of it, 06. Right. He was there till 08.
And the timelines are just too close, man.
They are, and the dismemberment. The first three, I think it's hard to deny that those three are connected, whether it's Neil or not. You're finding body parts scattered, wrapped in plastic, a lot of times in a tarp.
Right.
Was it Neil?
I don't think all of those missing women, like in all the states,
no,
are Neil.
No, I agree.
Obviously, the Long Island thing is way too crazy, but. But the Las Vegas stuff in particular, it just sounds like him.
I tend to believe the first three were him.
Yeah.
I have to.
And that was right. Wasn't that right after his mother died as well?
Yeah. So his mother dies, and apparently it affected him greatly.
Yeah. He said it was the only person who cared about him.
Yeah. Well, I think that was later. I think that was around the time.
Was that closer to Heather's?
Yeah. That was coming up on Heather's thing. I think he had lost it. I think his mother died, and then apparently one of the women that he'd been seeing turned out, he found out she was married.
Yeah,
and that was just one of those final straw things. I think by the time he gets to Heather, it was like we said, he wanted to get caught.
Yeah,
he
got careless.
Yeah,
got
I don't think he was gonna.
He was like, whatever.
I didn't think he knew he was gonna get killed, but I think he wanted to get caught because he did say he was gonna go away for a long time.
Yeah.
So
he also had a bulletproof vest.
He did have
something we didn't mention,
vest.
Which kind of ties into what we're talking about right now.
Right.
He was planning on a shootout. He was planning on a fight.
Okay.
You know?
That makes sense.
But oddly enough, he wasn't wearing it at the time that.
Well, he wasn't just planning on getting shot by Heather,
right?
With his own gun.
But
he was planning on.
He underestimated a feisty girl.
Yeah, he was planning on, taking her out and then maybe putting it on for the ride, probably.
Right.
Yeah.
Anything else you wanted to mention? The guy's a mystery. Two photos of him. Almost everything is speculation. You try and piece together the timeline of his life and when he was stopped by police and when he resided, which really there's only three residencies that we can actually pinpoint, which is Las Vegas. And then when he moved with his father, to Kansas, and then, mostly
he's
Oregon,
from
most
Oregon,
of his
though.
Life, most of his life was he resided in Oregon.
Yeah.
There was the 8-year period in Las Vegas where all these missing women come up. And then, the little stint in Kansas where nothing much happened cause he was younger then.
Right. Yeah, I think the bastard did it.
What do you think, Brandon?
I think he did it on most of these cases. Not throughout. I mean, prostitutes are low-hanging fruit for a serial killer. So, that can happen anywhere at any time. But there are some evidences of him being in these same areas that they're finding.
Right.
The prostitutes.
Do you think about this? To think from 03 to 06 that the prostitutes that came up missing or killed were only him doing it. Like, there's a lot of Johns out there and a lot of creeps. I'm sure there was other prostitutes killed, but these ones seem to fit the MO of the same guy, which is why they're linked to him.
Right. Yeah.
And what's interesting is if you look at Heather, who killed him, she looks just like. They almost look like sisters. The girls that came up missing in Las Vegas and Heather, they could all be sisters. They have the same exact look, the curly strawberry blonde hair, thin build, and chose dark lifestyles to go down, and it ended badly.
Yeah. It's a chance you take, man. It's a high risk profession.
It is.
But that doesn't mean their lives mean any less than anybody else's,
True.
But I think that is what really put an initial halt on these investigations. Yeah, like I was talking with my wife about it, and I was like, if the people that he killed were mothers or children or officers, you know, God forbid, or wealthy businessmen, I feel like these we'd have a lot more leads right now.
Definitely.
I mean, just being honest, I feel like it'd be.
I do believe that Lindsay Harris was actually a mother, if I read correctly.
Right, but she's. I mean, how deep did you have to dig to find that?
Was it Lindsay or was it? Yeah, one of them I believe was.
Yeah.
I think yeah, and yeah. You have to dig.
Right. That's not the initial thing.
But our main idea here is that it seems like if you look back through history, the prolific serial killers, they almost all have one thing in common: they targeted outcasts. They targeted
weak
prostitutes
because right. No one knows anything about them. You're already at a huge
addicts,
advantage.
Yeah.
No one knows their whereabouts.
Yes.
Let alone care about where they're going.
Yeah. So that 48, you know, you watch the first 48, they got that 48-hour window to try and their odds go out the window. That's already almost thrown out the window because they don't know where they are for the first 48 hours. They don't know where they were for the last 48 hours. They don't have a, like me, you could track my life easily. I go to work on this during these hours. I come home on this day. I go to the gym for an hour. Right. Like if you were watching me, it'd be like pretty easy.
Right.
You know what I mean? But these girls, it's different. It's really hard to track their whereabouts. They're meeting with all these different people that they don't even really know.
Yeah.
And yeah, so you can see it from the cop's perspective, but at the same time, it's unfortunate.
Yeah, it is.
Definitely. And it brings up a topic of prostitution. Should it be legal? Should there be more of a process where you can actually...
Man, at this point, it should be legal. I mean, obviously, there should be an age.
It's not going away.
It's not going away.
It's been around. It's the first
centuries.
It's the first profession ever.
Right. I mean, it's not going away. And if you make it legal, and if you make it more of a process, these people will have to be documented, and you know what I mean, for these to engage in these interactions.
Absolutely.
Because there'll be a lot more paperwork. There'll be a lot more going on. So it's. They'll be so much easier to track these people who are engaging in these meetings. As of now, it's all black market, under the table. I mean, I feel like it's the same way with illegal drugs, but, you know, we're not going down that rabbit hole.
Right.
I mean, I think if you're a consenting adult, you should be able to do what you want.
Speaking of documentation, there was also a lot of discussion boards I was reading that where they were trying to piece together his aliases online. Apparently, he had, I had them written down, where are they? He had some aliases that he was going by online, potentially, because they were able to link... the phone numbers that he was using to contact the girls through Black Pages or Back Pages, they were able to connect one of those numbers to a number he was using through an online alias, and they were even able to pull up some like conversations he had with local Las Vegas news on comment boards with under his actual name, and so he definitely seemed like he even covered his tracks online, like he made it hard to as far as Back Pages he wouldn't use his, I guess you would be kind of dumb to use your own name if you're meeting a girl to kill him, but. People were kind of able to track and find out his alias names. I want to say one of them was like BJ Ross, and then another, it was Ross. There was a common last name that he was using, and it was Ross.
Hmm.
Yeah, so.
It's interesting.
Just more shit to look into. You can dig as deep as you like. We dug as deep as we could in a week, and we hope that maybe if you already knew some about Neil, maybe you learned a little bit more, or if you didn't know anything, you learned a lot because, you know, we brought some information, but.
Right. And also check out the Facebook page. I don't know if we mentioned it. Heather, who gave us this shout out for this,
right,
got us hooked on this story. She started a Facebook page called Neil Falls Investigation.
I think so, yeah.
And it's...
you can become a part of the...
You can become a group.
Join. It's a group on Facebook.
Thanks for accepting my request. But yeah, I went down the rabbit hole of reading all that stuff. It's very interesting. It's this guy, there was a lot of signs, and...
Unfortunately, we may never know, and it, the longer you wait, the harder it gets to.
Yeah.
Luckily, we have DNA these days, so hopefully something will break. But sometimes patience is key with these type of things. Yeah. Years later, we may know, and you get one of those cold case files episodes on it. Dun 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 dun. I do.
Oh, is that what we'll do?
That was my original. That was my original love for crime was cold case files. When I was a kid, that's all I wanted to watch.
Mine was CSI, man.
CSI?
Yeah. CSI Las
Vegas. I love that one, too. CSI Las Vegas was great.
I did
CSI,
like CSI.
Miami, not so
and
much.
And I moved here. What an idiot.
Yeah. I warned you.
No, you didn't.
I warned you once you got here.
Once you're already here.
Well, I guess that'll about wrap it up for this episode, then.
Yeah.
I think so.
I think that's it.
I want to thank everyone for listening, and refer to the stuff I said at the beginning. You can email us at truecrimelasvegas@gmail.com.
Please do.
Rate and review on iTunes, Stitcher. You can rate on there. Definitely getting a larger response than we expected for only being a few episodes
yes,
in. We want to thank
so
everyone, that anyone that listens, even if you don't reach out, thank you. Share it with a friend, you know. And I guess that's it. We'll see you next week, Brandon.
Have a good day.
See you guys.